Simon Marks is LBC's US correspondent, live for us in Washington, D.C. Simon, to bring us up to date with the very latest in the course of the last few hours.
Well, it's just been an absolutely dizzying day of developments here, Tom, but it ends, I've just done the maths, with 1,584 feet separating Donald Trump from Joe Biden. Donald Trump is in the White House for his last night in the building with his family. Joe Biden is quite literally directly opposite it in Blair House, which is a guest house traditionally used by the U.S. government for visitors. He was invited to stay there by the Secretary of State. The State Department controls Blair House, and so he and Jill Biden are there tonight. At any point tonight or tomorrow morning, Donald Trump and Melania Trump could quite literally walk across the street, knock on the door of Blair House, shake Joe Biden's hand, shake Jill Biden's hand, and wish them luck over the course of the next 4 years. There is, of course, absolutely no indication that that is going to happen. Instead, at breakfast time tomorrow, they are going to skip town. They're going to leave the White House. They're going to head to Andrews Air Force Base, take one last flight on Air Force One, and head to Mar-a-Lago in Florida, where the president made it clear tonight he believes that his political movement has a future. Joe Biden was an absolute study in contrasts with Donald Trump today. Before he left Delaware, tears streaming down his face as he thanked supporters and remembered the memory of his late son, Beau Biden, said that it shouldn't have been him that was heading to Washington, D.C. as president, but in fact his late son, Beau. And as soon as he arrived here, he and Kamala Harris immediately went to the reflecting pool that sits at the foot of the Lincoln Memorial. And there, 400 lanterns were lit, symbolizing, and this number threshold was crossed today here, the 400,000 people who have died of COVID-19. Joe Biden immediately setting to work, leading the nation in mourning.
To heal, we must remember. It's hard sometimes to remember, but that's how we heal. It's important to do that as a nation. That's why we're here today. Between sundown and dusk, let us shine the lights in the darkness along the sacred pool of reflection. Remember all whom we lost.
And then in silence, he and Jill Biden, Kamala Harris and her husband Doug Emhoff watched as those lights got switched on. It's the first time ever that the reflecting pool has been lit up, and the National Mall is now home to 200,000 small American flags, symbolizing the scale of the loss of life as a result of the pandemic. The president-elect, as he is still, really beginning the process of implementing the first national response that we've seen to the pandemic. Meanwhile, as they were at the reflecting pool,
the world respects us again. Please don't lose that respect.
Donald Trump was releasing his farewell address to the nation for the first time, saying that he is praying for the success of the new administration, although he managed in the space of a 19-minute speech never once to articulate the name of Joe Biden. And he did indicate that he believes that his work may not yet be at an end.
As president, my top priority, my constant concern, has always been the best interests of American workers and American families. I did not seek the easiest course. By far, it was actually the most difficult. I did not seek the path that would get the least criticism. I took on the tough battles, the hardest fights, the most difficult choices, because that's what you elected me to do. Above all, I fought for America and all it stands for, and that is safe, strong, proud, and free. Now, as I prepare to hand power over to a new administration at noon on Wednesday, I want you to know that the movement we started is only just beginning. There's never been anything like it.
He made only the most glancing of references to the COVID-19 death toll. He said, "We grieve for every lost life." And then he moved on to other topics, defending his record in office. So President Trump will be leaving town at a moment when you can actually physically feel his power ebbing away. Earlier in the day, the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, completing his break with Donald Trump, making it absolutely plain on the floor of the Senate that it was the President of the United States who provoked, fomented and incited that insurrection up on Capitol Hill with the cost of five lives lost 13 days ago. And Charles Schumer, the man who'll soon be running things at the Senate, the Democrat leader there, insisting that the president's impeachment trial will go ahead in a bid to try and convict him of high crimes and misdemeanors to make sure that he can never run for public office again.
We're seeing, Simon, the first sort of public discussions about what it is Joe Biden is going to maybe announce in his inaugural address, and indeed what he is going to do in the first few hours of his presidency tomorrow. Talk about re-engaging with the Paris Climate Accord, starting the talks to re-engage with the JCPOA, the Iran deal. The Telegraph today, Biden to launch blitz on the age of Trump. I just wonder what you make of the idea that Biden has to be very careful about how he goes around launching a blitz on the age of Trump, because any sort of, you know, victory parade of we're getting rid of this, we're getting rid of that, gosh, wasn't he an awful bloke, is going to upset those who he claims he can unite.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think that the theme of this inaugural address tomorrow, and there'll doubtless be soaring rhetoric from Joe Biden after he takes the oath of office. By the way, he's making a second inaugural address tomorrow night as well. So yeah, this is going to be a speech in kind of two parts. But the theme is clearly going to be the need for healing, reconciliation. And as he stressed on the campaign trail throughout 2020, the need to lead the country in the interests of the United States of America. The difficulty that Joe Biden faces, as you point out, Tom, is he's taking over at the most polarized moment imaginable in a country that was already extremely polarized, not just having to deal with the COVID-19 crisis, the economic catastrophe that it's created, but also now having to deal with a very real national security crisis and the sudden realization that the threat to America's security doesn't come from outside. It doesn't get solved by closing borders and building walls. The problem comes from the conspiracy theorists that have been unleashed on President Trump's watch and who are, according to the FBI, still planning to take violent action, believing as they do, falsely, that Joe Biden is an illegitimate president. So he's going to have to work very, very hard. I mean, any one of those three issues would confound anybody coming in, but he's going to have to work incredibly hard to manage expectations. Yeah. The expectations of Democrats are off the charts, yeah, impossible, yeah, to meet. And he's going to have to find a way over the next few weeks and months to get a lid on all of that.
We are gloriously going to be hearing a lot from you, Simon, over the course of the coming hours. I know, I mean that genuinely. That wasn't a backhanded
thing. Thank you, Tom.
I mean that genuinely. Particularly when the inauguration happens, you're on with Eddie Mayer from 4 p.m. this afternoon. I just wonder, though, as we wave goodbye to the era of Trump, you and I have had many conversations here on LBC. You know, Donald Trump was a feature in my life, my working life before here, mm-hmm, when in Number 10, you know, talked to him on the phone and meet him at various summits and see what he was like behind closed doors, which, as you can imagine, isn't very different to what he's like, no, when the door is open. I wonder how do you make sense of the last 4 years? And is there a particular moment, a standout moment to you that you, you know, will take with you for the rest of your life as an example of what the Trump presidency meant?
I'll tell you what the standout moment was, and I think you and I were actually on the air for it, and it was the moment when the chemical gas was used against peaceful protesters in Lafayette Park, directly opposite the White House several months ago. It was the first indication of just how far this president was prepared to go in a bid to threaten the checks and balances and constitutional safeguards that lie at the very heart of this country's governing arrangements. If you recall, I think we were on the air,
yes,
at the point at which protesters were kneeling in the streets opposite Lafayette Park with their hands in the air and National Guard troops and others were threatening to move them all out violently minutes after they had been on the receiving end of tear gas, or as we subsequently learned, a slightly different chemical agent. And that was really, I think, the point of absolutely no return that led inexorably to the insurrection that we witnessed on Capitol Hill 13 days ago. You know, it is easy to say that this president is leaving office in disgrace, but this president is leaving office potentially threatened with accusations of criminal activity that go way beyond anything that took place here during Watergate. I don't think that Watergate is any longer the gold standard for the disgrace of a sitting president of the United States in the modern era. Whether he's convicted at his impeachment trial or not, whatever the criminal prosecutions that lie ahead amount to or fail to amount to, it is just jarring to sit here for 4 years. I mean, I've been here for a lot longer than that, as you know, in a country that prides itself on being the most developed democracy, the indispensable nation on the world stage, and to see so much of that threatened and some of it to fall apart in such a short period of time. It's alarming and absolutely unbelievable. I haven't seen anything like it professionally since the 1990s, when I was living in Moscow and witnessed the attempted coup against Mikhail Gorbachev. It's that level of drama and crisis.
Great to talk to you again, Simon. Good luck for the rest of tomorrow as we cover, it's tomorrow your time, today our time, the rest of the inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden. Simon Marks, LBC's US correspondent, live for us in Washington, D.C. Heck of a lot to get your teeth into here tonight. Whether or not it is your reflections on 4 years of Trump, successes, any? Moments of standout clarity about what Trump was there for, about why he was elected president, what Joe Biden should do to, as he says, unite and heal the American people. And I just think the triumphalism with which those on the left, Democrats, might start to say, hooray, we're ripping up this awful man's legacy. I think they've got to be incredibly careful about that. And I realise that that is in contrast to what Donald Trump did. I mean, he just went straight in there, took a wrecking ball in there. But I'm not sure the Democrats can say, well, Trump did it, and act in a similar fashion. Otherwise, Joe Biden is never going to be able to make good on the rhetoric about uniting and healing. 0345 6060 973 84850 to text. You can tweet at LBC as we gear up to inauguration here on LBC. Tom Swarbrick, it's 12:22.
The historic moment of the inauguration is fast approaching.
Later today, Joe Biden will raise his right hand and take the oath of office to become the 46th president of the United States.
I've always believed we can define America in one word. Possibilities.
Join me, Eddie Mayer, for full coverage of an inauguration like no other.
Joe Biden will take the oath of office behind a ring of steel. Washington is now a fortress. I'm Simon Marks with live coverage from the U.S. Capitol.
Don't worry if, like Donald Trump, you won't be at the inauguration. LBC will take you there this afternoon from 4.
This is LBC.